Rasaloma, Tir Driti Rasaloma cha, Niyut Sarpiri Lambika, Iravati Sutta Diksha, Rudranyo Rudrates Triaha.
O Rudra, you have 11 wives called the Rudranis, and they are as follows: Ti Driti Rasala Uma, Niyut Sarpi Pila. Pambika, Niravati, Sutta, and Diksha.
Trihanaitani namani, sthanani chastayoshanaha, Epi srija prajapati, prajanam asiyatpatihi.
My dear boy, you may now accept all the names and places designated for you and your different wives. And since you are now one of the masters of the living entities, you may increase the population on a large scale. Purport. Brahma, as the father of Rudra, selected the wives of his son, his living places, and his names as well. It is natural that one should accept the wife selected by one's father, just as a son accepts the name given by the father, or as he accepts the property offered by the father. That is the general course in increasing the population of the world. On the other hand, the Kumaras did not accept the offering of their father, because they were elevated far beyond the business of generating a great number of sons. As the son can refuse the order of the father for higher purposes, so the father can refuse to maintain his sons in increasing population because of higher purposes. Om Jnana Chikina Tasya Vinanjana Sulakaya Sakshur Militam Vena Tasmai Shri Yugade Namaha Shri Chaitanya Nodhissam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Dadamayam Tathati Samadhanitam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutara Kamanam Shri Guru Vaishnavam Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Shaganaragatam Sādvaitāṁ sādhūtāṁ parijanāsahitāṁ krishna chaitanya devāṁ Śrī Rādhā krishna pādāṁ śraganā vadikā Śrī Vishākāntitāṁ śraṁ He krishna pavadana sindho nīna bandho jagatpate Lokesha Lokika Nanda Ratha Nanda Namaste Abdharam Shana Romani Rathe Vrinda Nishri Prashavanam Sute Devi Kanani Vekriye Panchakto Pradurjascha Vipasindho Krevacha Patita Namo Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shiva Sahi Gaurava Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Father Lord Brahma requested the son, please accept these names, accept these places, and accept these wives. And now you're a Prajapati, so you should have a lot of children, generate population on a large scale. This is one of the great concerns of Lord Brahma in his work, his populated universe. First he engineers the creation. And then he has the responsibility of getting bodies, essentially, for the living entities. There are all these living entities who require to live in the universe, and they need bodies in which to do it. And Brahma has to arrange for that. So the first attempt was a failure. The Kumaras refused. We're not going to get entangled in this material existence. Thank you very much. We'll remain a Brahmachari. So that was good for them, but it was problematic for Lord Brahma because he still had to get the work done. So he became angry at them. And from the anger, Lord Shiva was born. So now Brahma requests him,
you please take up this work. Take up this responsibility. Srila Prabhupada comments here that as the son accepts a name from the father, it's natural that he should accept the wife selected by the father. This, of course, is culturally another world from what we're accustomed to, especially in the West. It's gradually becoming another world from India also, but especially from the West. The idea is, at the modern West, I should say, because previously this was not alone, but in the modern West, the idea that your father would pick your wife is like, what? Or that your father would pick your husband. Sounds like it might as well be coming from Mars. But the modern Western way of doing things is not actually an improvement. It's supposed to be that the father really doesn't know what he's doing. How could he know whom you should marry? For him to stick you with somebody is unthinkable. And how does he know what will make you happy? And so we should find out for ourselves, find where love and happiness will be available. That's not working. The first thing is, the whole endeavor is so problematic. It's such a drag. Starting from, late grade school, I suppose, and working its way up through high school and college, the whole business of mixing and seeking and endeavoring and striving and testing and trying out and heartbreak and exploitation and people using people and basically becoming, having to, first of all, just the endeavor of having to go through all that. The endeavor, the confusion, the pain, the sometimes disaster. You really didn't expect that so-and-so would get pregnant, but so-and-so got pregnant in spite of all precautions. Then that becomes a big disaster because then you have to have an abortion or you have to, something has to happen. Then maybe you get stuck with someone that you didn't love anyway, if you marry the person. And if you don't, then there's a child to be killed. Failing all of that, or if none of that disastrous stuff happens, then you just have a whole lot of trial and error, which means error, basically. Trial and error, both. And after all of that pain and sorrow, both parties are now, all parties are now suspicious, burnt. They all have their bad experience. And so nobody trusts anybody. Even marriage is now becoming a two-step process, really, increasingly, according to the Department of Statistics, that whichever department handles these things, it's becoming increasingly, step one is you live together, and step two is, if that works out, then after a few years you may get married. And so often it doesn't work out,
But people don't want to just get married because it's what they call a crapshoot. You know, you don't know your chances of having it work 50-50. So people don't want to commit themselves to such an iffy arrangement. They'll just move in with one another and give it a try and see how it goes. And if it goes, then they'll solemnize the relationship. If no other reason comes along earlier for solemnizing the relationship. But statistically, that's not working any better than marriage. It has, in fact, I think the statistics are worse. The breakups is a mess. It's an emotional mess. It's painful. It's expensive. It's troublesome. And then, if you do commit yourself, the parties get married, then, again, it's a 50-50 deal. 50-50 deal means not 50-50 deal, it's 50-50 chance. Someone was addressing a crowd of married people and said, you know, half of you are going to get divorced. It's just a question of which half. And that's where it stands. So that's a remarkable failure rate. Half the marriages fail, and second marriages it's higher, and third marriages still higher. So it's supposed to be, you know, that by taking things into our own hands, we find love, we find happiness. But the Vedic arrangement is different. The parents do the choosing. They're actually in a better position to do it because the young people will be, first of all, are inexperienced. They don't know what is what. And it's not that by having a lot of sex they become experienced. They become experienced in one sense, but they don't become smart. They don't become mature. They just become, what would you say? Active, but not necessarily mature. And they'll choose on the basis of physical attraction or some sort of flighty ideas, romantic ideas, and it's, or even practical ideas, who's got money, who's got whatever. Whereas the parents will be more sober. They can spot a rascal by his signs. They're looking out for who's a rascal, who's a floozy, and they can see who's the more long-term considerations. What is his character? What is his name? What is his family? What is her character? What sort of family is she from? What is the compatibility in terms of astrological considerations? So many different, what's the earning power? So many different considerations they can take account of and make a sober determination. So that was the system that these things were arranged by the parents. And if you go by results, at least in India up till recent decades, the marriages have been very stable. Discounting that, all right, some of them have been terrible and some girl is trapped with some terrible man who exploits her and so on, but those are minority cases. And your divorce rate was, you know, the number of split ups and disaster scenes and serial marriages and all of that. These things were practically unknown. So you had stability. People would get married. And all right, now that business is done. Without having to go through all the mating games of years of mating games. Without having to go through
we tried one, we tried another, we got to go through divorce and remarriage. All right, that the sex problem is dealt with. They're matched up. Someone is, they're married. And then there's a stable platform for children. And the family tradition goes on. It worked. Just pragmatically, it worked. Discounting, yes, some unhappy marriages, but there are plenty of those anyway. Of the 50%, and it's only 50% who stay married in the West, how many of those who stay married because they're happy? Because they found love and contentment? Or how many of them stay married because basically they're stuck by economic circumstances, by, well, you know, children and so on? So you're not doing, you're not looking at a very good percentage there anyway. And certainly in the Vedic marriage system, you're not looking at, you know, half the marriages are marriages in which everyone feels stuck. But practically 95, close to 100%, they would stay together. And out of those, some percentage would feel unhappy anyway, which they feel in the Western system regardless. But you have stability. Therefore, the system is superior. And it's unfortunate. The Western system is simply unfortunate. Simply unfortunate. So much trouble. And then after divorce, it's still troublesome. It's not like, well, that didn't work out. That didn't work out, and there's child support, there's alimony, there's children to go back and forth between one side and another side. I was speaking to a fellow I met at the train station who'd been married and been through all the pain of it. And he had to pay child support. And his conclusion was expensive habit. Having children is an expensive habit. So people are suffering. Even, forget about Krishna consciousness, just by their social arrangement, they're suffering. And then what to speak of suffering, because they don't know who they are, they don't know the purpose of life, they don't know Krishna. That's the real cause of their suffering. And that's compounded by having an invented way for happiness, which doesn't make anyone happy. It's interesting here that the sons could disobey the orders of their father for a higher purpose, as the Kumaras did. Here also it says that the father can refuse to maintain the sons for a higher purpose. I'm not quite sure why Prabhupada has said that here. There's nothing Brahman doesn't intend to, although there are some grandsons he's not going to be very happy about. But there's no mention here of anybody refusing to maintain sons. But Prabhupada mentions it anyway, it's purport. Apparently, sannyas means refusing to maintain children. That's for a higher purpose. That's for a higher purpose. It's expected that the father will be dutiful in family life, maintain his wife and children. But for a higher purpose, one can even neglect that duty, as the Śrīla Prabhupāda also did. Of course, he was already old enough, but he had his children and his wife, but he gave them up for the service of Krishna for the highest purpose. Increasing the population is a necessary function, but it's indicated here that it's not the highest function. The highest function is to revive one's eternal relationship with Krishna. Okay, more questions?
Yeah, this is the. You're speaking about. One thing is living a life separated from the children, living single, so much anxiety and so much frustration and stress, and then feel isolated, feel lonely, and
even disease on account
of
anxiety.
Yeah. And interesting, there was this one person. One devotee who was separated, divorced from her husband for decades.
Mm.
Decades, separate life. Decades and decades.
Mm.
And then recently he was about to pass away.
He passed away?
He was about, cancer or something. He was about to pass away. And interesting enough, so then the wife went and took care of him. So which kind of tells you that, so why did they get divorced?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what was it that, you know, if it was something on a superficial level or something, there was something, you know, didn't work out, that kind of midlife crisis, something, and so forget it. But then when it comes, when it really comes push to shove, then the attachment is so strong to that person still.
Mm-hmm.
That they had 30 years of separation, and then there was still that one person was still so much prominent in their life that they couldn't really live with that person.
Mm.
30 years.
Mm.
And then, you know, at the end it came out that it's just why the breakup, you know?
It's artificial. It's the breakup is because we are conditioned, or what's the word? There's a word. There's an increased expectancy of breakup. There's an atmosphere or conducive to breakup. Breakup is approved. Breakup is encouraged. The mother will say, well, you know, why do you live with him then? You know, why are you staying with him then? You know, the girl's mother will say, you know, why don't you just divorce him? It's easily available and acceptable option. And on account of the ease and acceptance, it's seen as a sort of a quick fix. Not so, a few decades ago. When I was growing up, I knew exactly one person who'd been divorced. You know, his family. In our whole family, I knew one person who'd been divorced. And that was sort of... wasn't very respectable what could be done. Now it's just like, of course, you know, you meet someone like 40, you assume she's already been divorced and remarried, or he's already been divorced and remarried. It's more or less a likelihood that they're on their second or their third. It's a live option and almost an expectancy when people go into the relationship. Even marriage is kind of a tryout. We'll do it, and if it doesn't work, we can break it up again. So when you have that sort of termination option so clearly built in, you're making it easy and even likely that a split will occur where there wouldn't have been a need. Like Chanakya Pandit says that when there's arguments between husband and wife, it's like rain, and it's like clouds in the morning, thunder in the morning. It should be, if there's thunder in the morning, it doesn't signify rain. So arguments between husband and wife, that's standard. There must be arguments between husband and wife. That's to be expected. But they... turn it into a syndrome and a pathology and a this and a that, and they diagnose it and they say, well, under the circumstances the best thing could be, and so you get these splits and split. Now there may be circumstances where really it's like dangerous or life threatening for two people to get stay together. It's not that it has to be totally inflexible, but the
so many divorces are simply unnecessary, but they're necessary because, first of all, they got together on a whim, without proper consideration, without adequate thought, and for all the wrong reasons. And so, naturally, they're dissatisfied. And so, well, the best thing is, why don't we just, you know, it's not working, why don't we just face up to it and split? And then they, you know, and then the next one is not going to be better, statistically. The next one is likely to be just the next fiasco. But on and on they go, making the same mistake again and again. Otherwise, if you're smart, it didn't work, forget it. Why will that? And statistically, this didn't. I tried it; it didn't work. And statistics tell me, and we have all these statistics about how, you know, people never remain brahmachari. Well, the statistics for marriage are worse. A happy marriage statistic. I've tried it; it's failed. And statistics tell me that the next one is less likely to succeed. Why don't I just pack it up? Forget it. Go on to, as Prabhupada says here, higher things, higher purposes. That they won't do. They'll stick to the same thing. That's advice in business. If something's not working, do anything else. The marriage is not working, but they do it again and again. Gluttons for punishment. The best thing is to consider, even within marriage, if you have a higher purpose, then if the lower purposes are not being very well satisfied, anyway, you have a higher purpose. Maybe my senses are not so gratified, my husband or wife is not exactly what I thought they would be. I've got lots to grumble about or be sorry about or dissatisfied about, but anyway, I have a higher purpose, so I will. But because they have no higher purpose, they're busy trying to make a success of the lower purposes, and the lower purposes are not very easy to work with. And then also because there's no commitment, where the guy's like 40 or 50, he can just ditch her. Because I was seeing some places, someone was writing that as a woman gets older, her market value decreases. Because a woman is attractive by her beauty, by her youth. So as a woman gets older, her market value decreases. And as a man gets older, his market value increases because he has money and career and status and so on. So now he's got the upper hand, so he ditches her. Okay, old lady, go look for the next guy. I've got tonight a beautiful new young man. So it's not very good. Irresponsible civilization. Instead of a sense of responsibility, there's a sense of my responsibility is to gratify my senses. And I have no higher responsibility. Well, I wouldn't do nothing so.
Sitting where we're at, you know, in ISKCON, of course, also, and what are some of the ingredients that we would have to have?
Pure devotional service. You have to have people who are more serious about spiritual advancement than they are about gratifying their senses. When their motivating factor is spiritual progress, then you have a possibility of changing things. If the motivation, if the idea is sense gratification with a little frosting on top of Krishna consciousness,
your chances are very high of changing things. The most important thing is Krishna consciousness. And then beyond that, when there's Krishna consciousness, then more goodness becomes more prominent, more the passion and ignorance, because these things grow from passion and ignorance, and the whole social arrangement grows from and is conducive to, breeds passion and ignorance. So when you develop goodness, then you don't get all the passionate, ignorant atmosphere becomes unattractive, the passionate, ignorant ways of doing things become unattractive. One develops the kind of settled mind and purity of thought, which are amenable to a more civilized arrangement. So those are some of the considerations. And good parents.
Mm-hmm. How do we explain that in our society, statistics show that our divorce rate is higher than the average?
All these statistics don't show that ours is higher than the average. It's about average, as far as I've seen. Yeah, it's about the same. How do we explain it? Passion and ignorance. Lack of Krishna consciousness.
And the other thing was, in Shastras it talks about different types of marriage, like Kshatriya marriage, Vaishya marriage, Rakshasa marriage. What is the importance or significance of these different types of marriages, and where they come into place?
Where do they all fall into place? Well, that becomes a big topic in the zero time remaining to us, right? Quarter.
Yeah.
It becomes a big topic. The first class marriage is the marriage in which the father hands over the girl to a suitable young fellow. And there's marriage by other means, which would have to be a larger discussion. The Kshatriyas used to sometimes basically grab a girl around. That was kind of good for the Kshatriyas because they would demonstrate their prowess and so on, which are suitable to the Kshatriya nature. The girl would always get a winner. She would always get a well-meaning guy because the losers wouldn't be able to get her. If her family would stop her. And you always read about the opposing armies and so on. So somebody had to be a little brave, courageous, bold, and so on to get into all that way. Anyway, those other marriages are a big topic, but Hare Krishna.
Thank you.
Oh, there's something even better than that first class marriage we talked about. Even better than that is no marriage.